Well, there are two recent reports out that speak directly to Michigan's energy future. One that calls for the development of a comprehensive integrated infrastructure plan, and the other that chronicles the success of an initiative to ramp up the installation of rooftop solar photovoltaic systems. With us to discuss both reports is Dan Scripps. Dan is a senior advisor to the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council. He's also president of the Institute for Energy Innovation. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Great to be on.
We have talked about the MEIBC before, but tell us a little bit more about the work of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council and the Institute for Energy Innovation.
Well, sure. And there's a lot going on in energy, and we're excited to be right in the middle of it. The Energy Innovation Business Council is a trade association of companies that are developing advanced energy solutions in Michigan, everything from energy efficiency companies to wind and solar manufacturers and deployment companies to the folks that are reinventing the smart grid and electrifying our vehicles. So a lot going on, and we really focus on trying to make Michigan a more business-friendly state for investment in advanced energy. The Institute for Energy Innovation is a nonprofit organization. We focus really on sort of developing the intellectual framework for some of these things, white papers and reports, stuff of that nature, as well as really rolling up our sleeves at the community level and focusing on community initiatives. How do you actually take the stuff that's in our white papers and make it make sense on the ground or on the rooftops?
Well, I don't need to tell you this, Dan, but so much going on the energy front, not only in Michigan, but across the United States, across the globe, quite frankly. But a lot of developments in Michigan. One report that I alluded to in my open was this 21st Century Infrastructure Commission Executive Summary. Just came out at the end of November, I believe. Tell us about that report.
Yeah, and this is something where the governor, I think, has taken the long view and started to put the building blocks in place for the conversation that we need to have around infrastructure, whether it's roads and bridges or water and sewer systems or our energy infrastructure. And it really is all of a piece. And I really commend the governor for taking a comprehensive view on this. He put together a group of 21 folks across the state back at the beginning of 2016. Called for it in a State of the State address and gave them a year to basically go out and develop a series of solutions and ideas around how do we modernize Michigan's infrastructure. That report came out end of November to the governor. He talked about it early in December. I think that's going to be, in large part, one of the big pieces of his agenda for his final 2 years in office, and I think it's exactly the right issues to focus on.
Yeah, there's been a tendency with infrastructure to sort of piecemeal it. We'll hear about bridges. We'll hear about roads, a lot about roads. We'll hear about trails. We'll hear about the grid. But the impressive thing about this report is the integration.
Yeah, and that's right. And I think, it is a testament to the importance of dealing with this. And we've seen it in Flint. We've seen it with the roads debate. But it's also, an understanding that these are all interconnected. And regardless of your view of government, the basic infrastructure building blocks are things that I think we all agree on. And that done right sets the framework for private investment, for long-term job growth, and for an economic vibrancy that I think will last well into the future.
Now, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but Michigan is the first state that has done this sort of an integrated plan. And one, given all the different entities out there that represent these different components of the economy, it's a difficult challenge to get all of these cats moving in the same direction.
It is. I mean, you look at any one of these debates. I mean, the discussion we've had over roads and bridges for the last 5 years, for example, has been difficult and contentious. And the grid is another one where it's constantly changing and evolving. But I think what the governor's done is to take a step and go big and say, a lot of these things are interconnected. They all are going to require, a mix of government support and private investment. And how do we do this and how do we do it right in a way that solves all of the challenges that we're facing from an infrastructure perspective to really set that sort of groundwork for the future?
This report has over 100 recommendations, and the price tag is something we'll talk about in a second. But it appears that the first step is something that's called an integrated asset management database system. Now, that's a lot of words, but essentially, what is that first step?
Well, I think it's really sort of getting our arms around what do we have, what do we need, what's the state of the infrastructure, where are the priority investments, what's it, you know, it's sort of taking that view and getting the data. And, you know, this is something that I think is emblematic of how the governor runs his office. That, and we saw on energy as well, that his first step in 2013, back, you know, 4 years ago now, was to say, how do we get together the right set of data to inform Michigan's energy decisions? And it was a year-long process led by the chairman of the Public Service Commission, came up with a series of reports on readying Michigan to make good energy decisions, was what it was called. And it was, you know, data-driven. And I think he's taking exactly the same approach on the infrastructure side.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of been part of his MO. And I think part of what he's done well is that he wants to assess from a data standpoint, from a metric standpoint, where we are before we can determine where we need to go.
I think that's right. And I think it's the right approach.
With respect to the price tag that I mentioned earlier, Dan, $2 billion a year right now, I think, is the number on in terms of our shortfall with what we should be spending on infrastructure that we're not. You factor that $2 billion or so over 20 years, and you're looking in the $40 to $50 billion range. I mean, that's a lot of money. Where's that money come from?
Well, and I think that's, you know, that's the $40 billion question. And I, you know, the governor, I think, has begun to float some trial balloons on this in terms of user fees and looking at sort of how do you get the folks who are benefiting from this sort of underlying infrastructure investment to pay their share of it. And, you know, that's going to be the most difficult part of this is how do you do it? But I think it's important to remember that these are long-term investments and they should be paid for over the long term. So, you know, that sort of price tag is daunting, and it should be, and we should have a real and honest conversation about how we get there. But it's not something that you do all at once either. And as in any sort of capital improvement, whether in the private sector or the public sector, you look at it, you look at the term of life for how long it's going to last, and then you figure out over that, the course of the improvement's lifetime, over the course of the, you know, the infrastructure investment, how do you pay for it over that time frame? And that's the right conversation. It's not that we need to cut a check this year for $40 or $50 billion.
To be sort of the devil's advocate here, though, Dan, they did list some recommendations on where some of this revenue might come from. And some of it's federal money, but we really don't know how much federal money is going to be available under a new administration here for things like this. Part of it is tax revenue, quite frankly. I mean, been in an environment in Michigan where we have a lot of folks out there that are really reluctant to pay more taxes. And we have a legislature, quite frankly, over recent years, that's been very reluctant to impose new taxes. Hence, you know, the road debate that you talked about earlier. I mean, one has to be a little bit skeptical about the ability to raise that kind of money.
No, and I think that that's right. I guess what I'd say is that, you know, when you ask people at the local level and you tell them exactly what their money's going to go for a specific school improvement, for a road millage that improves local roads, you see overwhelmingly that folks are willing to go out and support that. If they know what it's going for, if they trust that it'll be spent in a good way, they're willing to support it. If they think it's smoke and mirrors, I mean, the roads proposal that ultimately went to the ballot, right, I don't think enjoyed that sort of confidence. And so I think the onus in this debate is to be very explicit. What are the dollars going to be used for? And to make that connection in the public mind. I think you get there and at least you've got a shot. But I think it's going to take a real honest and transparent debate about how the dollars are going to be raised and what they're going to be put towards.
And how will the expenditure of those dollars affect me and my family in terms of roads and trails and water and things of that nature?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the other thing I'd point out is that this is, you know, it's not going to be all from one source. And on the energy side, for example, a lot of these are going to be done through utility rate cases. And it's going to, you know, it's not going to be that the legislature sits down and says, we're going to sort of impose this new tax or issue this new bond. It's going to be sort of as the utilities move forward in in updating their infrastructure and modernizing the electric grid? How do you sort of, over the long term, sort of build in the amount that's going to be needed? And that's really where we as the Institute for Energy Innovation are focusing, is how do you do that grid modernization work in a way that's transparent, that brings in ratepayer concerns, that looks at the long term, but also, you know, takes this as an opportunity not just to sort of rebuild the grid, but to really modernize it to take advantage of the sort of technological innovation that we've seen in the last 5 or 10 years.
We're talking about Michigan's energy future with Dan Scripps. Dan is a senior advisor to the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council. He's also president of the Institute for Energy Innovation. Dan, we talked about the infrastructure plan that has just come out at the end of November. There's another report that you helped to co-author. It's called the Solarize Michigan Final Report. It just came out in January. Tell us about the Solarize Michigan project.
Well, this was an opportunity to go into the Great Lakes Bay region, which is Bay, Midland, and Saginaw counties, and really sort of focus on how do you accelerate deployment of rooftop solar systems. And it's a great time to go solar. I mean, the federal tax incentives were extended. We now have certainty from the legislature, although that was a cloud that was sort of hanging over it during the course of the program. But the economics
in terms of the new energy policy.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And but also the economics, and probably most importantly, the economics, that solar was sort of a luxury item 5 years ago, even. And today it's cost competitive, that you can, with financing, and we saw this in the program, install solar on your home and get an immediate payback because the savings over the course of the loan are less than what you're paying for your electric bill. And that's a different world that we live in today. And we really wanted to sort of communicate that, educate the public, engage folks, and try and drive and jumpstart and spark solar deployment in that region. And you know, the results are that, you know, 2015 was the record year for solar installations, and we increased that rate by more than 250% over the course of 2016.
Yeah, the success of the program was apparent. A lot of people, you know, for a long time we heard, okay, Michigan's moving in wind, but not so much in solar. Solar's still not as cost-effective as wind. All of that's changing now. Why is it that solar's become more cost-effective?
I think it's a mix of things. I mean, one of them is just the technology keeps getting better, that you've got a lot of competition in this space, and you've seen a transformation in prices where 10 years ago, the last time we really had a robust energy discussion at the state level, solar was beginning to emerge, but really, really sort of early stages and very expensive. We saw declines even over the course of the 1 year that we were administering the program, where the price of panels just kept going down. The economics just kept getting better. And I think that there is a growing realization of that. And also you're starting to see, you know, competition among installers. We've got a great group of installers in Michigan. We've seen double-digit growth for each of the last several years in terms of number of systems installed, and you get more people, and all of a sudden you start to get some economies of scale. You start finding people who are being innovative in addressing permitting costs and customer acquisition. And that was part of what we wanted to do with Solarize Michigan, was to build the pipeline, streamline that process, and really just sort of allow the installers to do what they do best, and that's get up on roofs and start installing systems.
The thing that impressed me the most about the Solarize Michigan program from your final report, the steps that you folks took to make sure that there was buy-in among installers, among residents. You actually had some testimonial types of things where people showcased. But tell us a little bit about the implementation steps that led to the success of this program.
Sure. We really started by trying to take a step back and give people, you know, what the motto is, making solar simple. And so provide a one-stop shop resource where and be impartial. I mean, we weren't selling systems, we were helping to facilitate it. But try and provide some trusted information where they knew that they could find the answers. And so we did, you know, over the course of February and March, a series of 5 sort of community town hall meetings, speaking to local government groups. I don't know how many Rotary and Lions Club and Kiwanis events that our team went to, but we were active in sort of getting the message out. And ultimately, just trying to connect the installers on the one hand with people who are interested. there were two pieces where I think that we were particularly innovative. One was we offered a zero-cost, zero-obligation assessment of people's homes. They could sign up through the website at solarizemichigan.org, and we would go and take a look at their specific property and whether it was a good candidate for solar based on how it faced and the trees around it. That, I think, sort of made it real for people, that they could see their house and what solar would look like on their particular home. And the other, as you mentioned, was this sort of peer-to-peer learning network where mm-hmm. we held open houses. We called them open driveways. But people gone through the system could speak about it in terms, you know, neighbor to neighbor, what they went through, what savings they anticipated, whether it was difficult or not in terms of the process. And we found that that actually really sort of jump-started additional deployment, where those programs happen and people visited an open driveway event, signed up for that free solar assessment, they were much, much more likely to actually go forward and have solar installed on their house as well.
Now, I'm remembering you had almost 200 people sign up for the assessment, as I recall from the report.
That's right.
I know each circumstance, each home would be different, each commercial building would be different, like the library, for example, that you did. But in general, what was return on investment for the solar panels? I mean, was there some sort of an average?
Yeah, and we saw it, as I said, get better over the course of the program.
Right, but, because of the lower cost, right.
But we saw a payback time period of less than 10 years.
Less than 10.
With 10-year financing, so that on day one, you were paying less in terms of the loan repayment than you were paying for your electric bill before. That ability to sell something that comes with financing and that is cash positive from the very beginning obviously helps change the way people look at something that otherwise carries a pretty big sticker price with it. But these are 30-year panels, and so you've got a 10-year repayment period, and then you've got free energy. And yeah. That's I think, what I think in the long run really sort of opened people's eyes.
Did you find among those who asked for the assessment that there was a demographic where it was typically younger homeowners who were going to be in a house for a longer period of time, or was it across all demographics?
You know, it was mixed. My two favorite stories are one local couple in Midland. He's an executive with Hemlock Semiconductor. His wife, they just started a family over the course of the program while the panels were going up. And it's a house that their grandparents built and sort of a younger family just starting out. And then another guy who said that he had put some money away. He was going to build a man cave. And then he looked at what the solar return on investment was. He said, I can't afford not to do this. So it was really a mix, each story being unique, but we had some great stories come out of it.
Well, you've launched the program. It was a year-long program. I think Mott was one of the supporters of the program.
That's right. Yeah, the Mott Foundation provided the support, financial support to help make it possible.
I mean, one could almost look at this as a pilot because it was Midland, Saginaw Bay City area. I mean, is this a program that could be rolled out statewide?
Yeah, I think the two places where we're most excited are one, we hope that this creates a new normal, that it's not that we go back to the level of installation pre-solarized, but we've educated a series of communities. A lot of the folks who signed up for assessments, maybe this year wasn't the right year, but next year might be. So that sort of organic growth in that region. And then also, we intentionally made this a template for other communities. And we've seen folks in Ann Arbor and some other places come to us, ask us questions on structuring. The report includes our request for proposals, the response form, some of our promotional materials. We wanted to make it as easy as possible for other Michigan communities to replicate the success of this program.
Well, usually when we use the word contagion, it has negative connotations, but you've coined a term that was new to me. It's called solar contagion, and it's certainly anything but negative.
Yeah, it's...
What's solar contagion?
It's remarkable. If your neighbor installs solar, you're much more likely to install solar. And you get to a tipping point, and we did in at least one of the communities in Midland County, where you've got enough people that you just are likely to know somebody that's got solar on their roof. And all of a sudden, you start seeing solar take off in those communities. That neighbor-to-neighbor, that sort of familiarity, that it's not just something you're reading about, but you're driving past it every day. You've got somebody who goes to your church or that you work with that you can talk to about it. What's their personal experience? And you really start seeing it. And in places with much higher levels of penetration than we have in Michigan, Hawaii and California, Massachusetts, other places, that's really what you're seeing, that you get to a tipping point and then it just takes off and people see the benefits.
Where can people get a copy of the Solarize Michigan Final Report?
Yeah, it'll be on our both our websites, so solarizemichigan.org and then instituteforenergyinnovation.org, a much longer website. But
and I imagine if you just Google Solarize Michigan, you probably come up with it as well.
If we're doing our job, you should.
Well, congratulations on the success of the Solarize Michigan program, Dan. Love to have you back down the trail to talk about the infrastructure issue and any further rollout of the Solarize Michigan program.
Absolutely. Thanks.
My guest has been Dan Scripps, Senior Advisor to the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council, President of the Institute for Energy Innovation.